Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And good afternoon for another edition of Soundbites on July 22nd. We want to thank you folks for all tuning in to us. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Dennis Worster.
And I'm Chris Horn.
And as you can tell, we've got a full studio here of folks ready to take your questions and answers. Again, just to refresh your memory right at the top of the hour, our number here is 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And again, we want to reassure a lot of the folks have been asking, how's Nick doing? He is on the mend, and we do miss him, but he will be back. Nick is not gone. A lot of folks, oh, he's not coming. Yes, he is. He's just got to take some time to heal and send your prayers and thoughts to him. I'm sure he's getting the vibes anyways. But we are still continuing on here every Saturday to take your questions and hopefully come up with the answers that you're looking for to resolve your issues.
Not necessarily the right answers.
Nope.
An answer.
We do guarantee an answer.
We never said we never promised that. All we can do is, you know, take our years of experience, which for a lot of us, you know, I mean, Steve and I here have been doing this for 33 years here. And yeah. I know Dennis and you.
A couple decades, yeah.
Chris, been doing it for quite a few years, too.
What
so,
time
you
is
know,
it now?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot of, you know, input. So hopefully we can cover it. We've got all the bases covered as far as Linux and Mac and PC. So, and like I've said, it seems, and this is just my view on it, but it just seems lately, in the past year, we've shifted from PCs, you know, and the big desktop mm-hmm. units and right. the big gaming units and everybody mm-hmm. had the, now to laptops.
Very common.
And even now, even tablets, more down to tablets and phones.
Tablets and phones. I mean, those are the key three things. And I've said it now for over a year. You go into most big box stores.
Right.
And you're not going to see the big boxes anymore.
No, it's true.
You want a big tower.
It's a niche market at this point.
Yeah. If you want a big tower or something like that, you've got to either go locally, which we always recommend mm-hmm. because there's still a number of good dealers out there that you can go in and say, okay, I need to be able to do this. And they can build a custom box for you.
That's right.
And the other good thing, which when I had my business going, which I always told folks, and I know Steve's group does too, is when you have an issue, you've got a place locally to go to, and a face that you can talk to. Not something over the phone that, right. you'll, oh, well, try this or this, and then hang up, see how fast they can get you off the line, because that's their helpline.
Or even worse, the unknown random tech support guy that calls and says, are you having problems with your computer?
Yeah.
Because almost everyone has some problem with their computer all the time.
Yeah, it's a pretty safe bet.
So,
yeah.
You know, I mean, those, if you want a big, and there's still folks that need the big boxes to do sure. certain things in that. But the vast majority now, like we've said, have gotten down to where they can do it on a laptop, using the cloud, and either a tablet or their phone, and accomplish everything that they want to do.
Right.
There's
yeah.
a lot of places in the world where the phone is your primary and sometimes only computer.
True.
I think for my kids, their phone, their smartphone yeah. is their primary device.
Right.
And
are they ever going to get an actual computer, in quotes? Because well, that is a computer in your hand.
But they yeah. do, and they certainly use it. But the thing, like I personally hate typing a text message or an email on my phone. Mm-hmm. I'll do it. but I'm at least not happy about 20 it. Times faster on a real keyboard.
Sure.
And they don't have that barrier. They're much quicker.
Well, yeah, I mean, you've been using that
natively. Carpal tunnel issue with your thumb, repetitive strain injury,
I guess,
in your thumbs from typing so fast,
right?
Or using a controller.
Yeah, 100 words a minute on the keyboard is considered fast.
Right.
People are able to type that fast on their phone keyboard with just two thumbs.
Right. I think a lot of that might be the autocomplete, though. They're typing the first few characters and a lot of it, picking it from the list.
Yep. Yeah.
And then the prediction of what word comes up next. I think they might be scanning that before they even
selecting
type.
It, yeah, yep. Makes it
and seeing
more
how far
efficient.
They can get.
Yeah. I read about a Twitter feed once that they were writing a story,
okay,
and everyone would write one word next, and they would use whatever the auto suggested next word was.
Oh yeah,
what a heck of a story!
Yeah, I've seen some tweets like that. Yeah,
yep.
Another good thing about the local shop is that if your needs change, they are ready to hear that, and they are ready to suggest differences in configuration or improvements.
And
that
plus,
they can make.
If something goes wrong, which things will. I mean, you know, you can buy a brand new machine and say have a DVD drive fail on you or a hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
Well, because you bought it locally, it comes with a warranty. You can take it in there and get it done. Whereas if you buy it elsewhere, they've got to ship it off. It can take over a month or so to get it back and have it back in your hands, whereas you got to go to a shop here locally, you're talking days.
Right. Well, it's the difference between buying a la carte and buying
bespoke.
A salesperson who actually is going to listen to your needs.
Right.
Because you can go to a local shop and say, look, first and foremost, I want to spend $500.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to be able to play Fortnite at 1080p. In 60 frames per second,
right.
But this is for my kid, and my kid wants to do Twitch streaming. So we have to have that video feed going to Twitch somehow, however that works.
Right.
Yep.
And I need a hardwired connection.
You can't get that off a shelf.
No.
Not easily, no.
But, right.
Yeah, and I think it's a lot like getting a dress or a suit made by taking your measurements and then having it made to measure. Or if it's buying something off the rack and then having it altered later.
And being able to have alterations.
I've read that once you get something hand tailored, you can never go off the rack again. Which is why I've avoided that hand tailoring.
Yeah. No, me too. Let's say that.
I was with a friend once and we were in a famous local suit maker shop and he was getting measured for a new suit. And I jokingly said, well, do you want to leave room for your holster? And the tailor started to.
Uh-oh.
Apparently, that's not an unusual request.
Wow. Oh, no.
Good to know.
This is the Devil Wears Prada version of sound bites this Saturday.
All right, tell you what, let's go to the phones. We got Ron from Rochester. Go ahead, Ron.
Yeah, good afternoon, guys. I'm running Windows 10. My machine's about 4.5 to 5 years old, okay? My wife's machine crashed. It's no good. So she's running Google. We tried to get on Google on my machine last night so she could check her email. I got a message back that said, your Microsoft has expired.
Okay.
And it's only good for 5 years. And I never heard anything like this. In order to get Microsoft to work on my machine again, I would have to pay either 3 to 5 or 8 years have it run.
That sounds fake.
Yeah, that sounds like a scam.
There are two ways to buy and did it say Microsoft what? Because Microsoft is the company and they have dozens of products.
Windows or
Windows you pay once and never have to pay a license again.
And was this an email or how did you receive this message?
Is this a scam?
Most likely, yeah. So Microsoft Office comes in a one-time perpetual license. Or a 1 year you pay every year license. There is no 3 year, 5 year, so it's almost.
Let's back up for a minute. How did you first see this message?
I bought the computer at a reasonable store.
That's not my question. When you turned the machine on, when did you see this message that you had to buy another version of Windows?
No, I did not. It just said I need to pay a fee to reinstall Microsoft.
Was it an email you got?
Yeah, was it an email or turning it just on or what?
The computer wouldn't say that on its own.
Yeah.
No, they just downloaded a version of Microsoft, and then they allowed me to get into Google.
Microsoft what? Because that doesn't make any sense.
It's like saying Ford.
Right, yeah, you have to buy a Ford. Well, no, you don't. And what Ford? So Microsoft what? That's the first clue that it's fake, because it would say Microsoft something. And you don't need anything from Microsoft to get into Google.
Yeah, no, because if you're turning the machine on, it boots, and it's sitting there. And it's waiting for you to either start up a program or set up your web browser or open up a word processing program. That's Windows. That's running. Now, if you're trying to go to your web browser and then get into Google, say you're opening up Chrome and you're trying to go to your Google Mail, that is your web browser. And 10 to 1 odds, you're being hacked.
Well, no, it's not a hack. It's a fake ad coming from a website.
Yeah.
So there's an ad for tires, there's an ad for cars, there's an ad for diapers, there's an ad that says you have to buy this program. And it's fake and lying.
Yeah, that's what I mean. They're hacking you and trying to make you believe that you need to get this or that and scam you out of money.
Yep.
Okay, because I had a guy from Florida. He was walking us through it. He got into my computer.
Oh, that's horrible.
Okay,
right. So now it's even worse. He could have installed malicious software in your computer without you knowing it.
Yep.
They could have rummaged around and find. Do you have a password list document? That's one thing they try to find. If they try to get you to log into your bank so they can steal your bank password. I would recommend you take your computer into a shop and have a professional malware cleaning.
Yeah,
because you never know what they put in.
That's okay. As soon as you let somebody else into your computer,
okay.
No matter how legitimate they sound, that's the symptom of a scam.
The thing is, we got a hold of Google, and this guy claims he was a supervisor.
You cannot get a hold of Google. Google does not have a phone number you can call.
The important lesson here is you can't really call Google.
Okay. Yeah.
You could kind of call Microsoft, but none of those big companies will ever call you. They don't. Okay. They don't care about your business. You don't represent enough money to them to have an actual person call you.
Not an individual. No. Yeah. Now, if you were a big corporation,
You'd have a
slight chance.
Well, you'd have a known sales agent that you would know and talk to.
Be dealing with.
Yeah.
But, so from the symptoms, because I have watched a ton of YouTubes on people being scammed, and then the whole scam the scammer thing, where they try and hack into the call centers, where these scams are coming from. Your data is probably fine. Your passwords are probably fine. They were trying to get you to put banking information or send them Google gift cards.
Right.
Yeah.
Something where they're going to get you to pay for something.
Ron, one question for you, though. Do you know how to do our security tango?
Dance? I know about it. I haven't been on it.
What I would suggest, if you want to save yourself some time and money, is go to the security tango and dance the complete tango. There's two programs that you're going to probably want to download also, Super Anti-Spyware and Malware Bytes.
Okay.
And, I assume that you already got a virus program on your machine?
Well, I haven't had a virus in that thing at all lately, so.
Well, do you have an antivirus program running, preventing viruses from getting in?
Okay, so I'll run Security Tango on this thing.
Yeah. Run the complete Security Tango.
Okay.
And see if that helps you at all.
If you're uncomfortable doing that, take it into physically a known computer repair shop.
Yeah.
And have them you can trust.
Tell them you might. But like I say, if you want to save yourself a little money, since it's an older machine, you don't want to put a heck of a lot into it, try running the Security Tango.
Okay.
It's extensive, but it does work.
It's going to take some time. It's not going to be done in an hour. You know, it's going to take some time and effort, but you just sort of get it running, and, you know, you do one phase, walk away, come back in a little while, then start the next phase.
Because Nick isn't here today, I can say that's why Nick is an internet hero for putting that together and keeping it up to date.
That's true.
Yep.
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yep. No problem.
In.
Good luck. Let us know how you make out, sir.
I will do. Thank you.
And that's sort of a general warning to everyone that's listening. no company is ever going to call you and tell you you have a problem. And any random message that pops up saying you have a problem is most likely lying.
Yeah.
Especially if it doesn't come from the known notification center. Both Windows and Mac have an area where notifications come in. You have an email. You have a so if it doesn't come from there, it's definitely fake. Well, but the bad guys have figured out how to put fake notifications in the real place, too.
Well, that's why I was having a little problem there with him. He wasn't quite understanding at what point did he see the,
probably
that error.
The rest of the story was really important.
leading up to that. You know, how far did you get into? Because, you know, to sit there and say, oh, they want me to have Windows. Well, wait a minute. Like you say, it was very vague.
We're starting on chapter
hopefully
four.
Hopefully we got him on the right track. He can do the security tangle. Nick is always updating that and with the links and everything else. So we tell folks all the time, if you're not doing it, why not? It's out there. It's free. We offer it to help, you know, as another tool to keep your machine running safe and clean.
And a lot of the programs in the Tango do have pay versions.
Yeah.
Typically with the pay version, you get support from them if there's a problem. Mm-hmm. And it scans all the time instead of just when you want it to.
Yep.
There can be problems with things scanning all the time in the background if you don't have enough beefy enough computer.
My advice is that you don't need to pay for security tools.
Yeah.
That what Microsoft does is perfectly good for the vast majority of people, as long as you don't click on
random links
or listen to people that call you on the phone.
And Microsoft Defender has an advantage that since it's from Microsoft, it's built directly into the OS, where all the third-party programs have to patch themselves into the kernel to get it to work right. And the bad guys know about, like, Norton and McAfee, and they won't release a virus until they can get past it.
And the other big
In the last couple of weeks, there was a big spat of fake McAfee messages came out. Mm. Email and fake ads on websites claiming to be from McAfee that your McAfee subscription has expired, you need to renew. And it was all fake.
It would take you to a page that looks like McAfee. Then you put in your credit card number, and they'll charge you. Then they'll take the credit card number and go work on other things.
But the one thing I cannot stress enough, folks, is all these big corporations like Google, Social Security, the IRS, Microsoft, any big corporation is not going to contact you as an individual and tell you there's a problem.
Yeah, they wait for you to call them.
So if you see something like that pop up on your machine, the one thing I would highly recommend, because it won't hurt it, is shut the machine off.
Yeah, if you can close your browser window, that's usually enough. But a lot of times these fake ads hide the close buttons.
So that's why I just say, if you have to, pull the plug, shut that thing right down. Let it set for a good 5 minutes or so, come back up. Now, if it wants to open up the browser to where it was before, say no.
Yep.
Start it up fresh. Because
restore Windows, it might say.
Yeah.
Say no.
Because it's probably that pop-up window or everything, that page is going to be right there, and boom, you're still at square one. Start out fresh.
We sometimes say that you were lucky enough to see that ad first.
Yep.
Because the web hosting people that run that website are pulling the fake ads down as fast as they can find them.
Yep.
But you found it. Congratulations. You were first. I suppose that... Sorry?
You're a winner, but loser at the same time.
Right. So, securitytango.com is the place to go to learn how to do this process of cleaning things out. There are a few different tools to download, and the free versions work just fine for this.
Under the Let's Dance menu, there's versions for Windows, Linux, Android, Mac, and iPhone.
Yeah, they've got just about all the bases covered.
Yeah.
SecurityTango.com is the place to go for that. You'll know you're at the right place when you see Nick's smiling face on the in the right sidebar. And you can proceed with that, and that most likely
get a T-shirt.
We'll get you all cleaned up.
He's got T-shirts for sale.
Oh,
yes, should.
I got to get a T-shirt. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if most people have noticed this, but since Windows 10, since the last few version of Mac OS, operating system vendors have tried very hard to differentiate between when a security event, when the operating system needs your attention, your approval to do something, like, hey, this is this program is trying to install. Do you really meet? Is this really okay? So that flips your screen into a mode that there's no browser that has the ability to trigger that.
Right.
It's only the operating system. And all of these pop-overs, pop-unders, bogus ads giving you some kind of call to action. Saying,
right. Based on fear.
Right. Right. Based, well, and also ignorance that, well, this looks completely legitimate. However, your operating system doesn't even work that way anymore. And I didn't realize just how much research Microsoft has put into how and when to ask for your attention. And none of those expiration anything messages are part of Windows, not for 10, right. 15 years.
Right. And even if you do have the annual subscription to Microsoft Office, you will get an email that your subscription is running out.
Yes.
And
you've got
when
60
you,
days, 30 days, yeah. 45 days.
Yeah. When you open Microsoft Office, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, open one of the programs, you get a message in that program
right.
that your subscription has expired. It wouldn't come from a random website
email.
You open.
Yep.
Yeah.
And the other thing, the one other program, I don't know if Nick, because I haven't visited the site in a while, Revo Uninstaller.
Yeah, it's on the Windows.
Yep. I recommend installing that, folks, highly, because as we've said, you know, you've heard folks call in and say, my machine's getting slow. You know, it's slowing down. Well, if you go ahead and get Revo Uninstaller, it does a much better job, more efficient job of uninstalling programs. Because basically, when you use the Windows Uninstaller, all it does is turn off one bit. And it leaves all that junk and residue in your registry. So if you installed and uninstalled and reinstalled a program, a printer, or whatever, three or four times, it's in your registry three or four times.
But that's not Windows' fault.
No, it's just Microsoft. It's Microsoft's fault.
It's their problem.
It's their fault in that they don't do a good job of cleaning it up.
No,
it's poor coding.
What they trust is they trust the installer and the uninstaller provided by the program. So if there's cruft left over, that's Microsoft saying, hey, you're responsible for cleaning up your own mess.
And most programs never assume you want to uninstall them. In fact, a lot of times it's hard to find the uninstaller. Yep.
McAfee is terrible.
Yeah. So why would you want to uninstall our cool program you got?
So that's why using Revo Uninstaller, it will go in there both into the file manager and into the registry and clean out all those remnants of any program that you want it to. And it keeps things running a lot smoother and a lot cleaner.
Yep. And I'm so the registry at a time, which is a file that registers all your applications. Back in the, you know, 40 years ago when Windows came out, you know, there were, 10 applications available.
Right.
It probably seemed like a good idea. But now when you have hundreds and hundreds of applications out, and it's so easy to say, that's cool, install. Oh, that's cool, install.
Right.
Makes a mess.
Yeah. All right, that music tells us first half hour of this program is just zipped right on by. But, hey, don't worry. We got a lot more to come right after these messages. So, we're going to take a quick break, but we will be back momentarily here at Jazz 90.1 and Soundbites.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to the next half hour of Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Wright.
I'm Dennis Worster.
I'm still Chris Horn.
Yeah.
Yep. And we're here to take your questions and hopefully come up with the answers. The line are wide open, so give us a call. The numbers are 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415, and we'll get you on the air. So,
if you don't have questions and you just need a lot of bad ideas.
Yeah.
Oh, we got those too. They're free.
Yep. Yep.
Well, sort of on that note in the news this week, Kevin Mitnick passed away on July 16th. He was one of the original OG hackers that one of the first ones to get prosecuted under the hacking laws.
God kind of made an example of that guy.
Yeah, there are rumors that Matthew Broderick's character in War Games was based on him.
Really?
Yeah, and he eventually, when he got out of prison, he eventually started working for the government,
right,
as a white hat hacker. And that was sort of what happened in the early days. So he was hacking into Digital Equipment Corporation in 1988. And what usually happened then is you told the person or the company that, here, I found a hole in your system, and they hired you to fix it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was an audition.
What is it? That other conference?
DEF CON?
The hackers conference?
Black Hat?
Yeah, there's Black Hat and DEF CON are big ones. In fact, where they caught him eventually, I think.
That's where a lot of businesses like to go to now to find some of this upcoming talent to test their systems.
They used to have a Spot the Fed contest, but feds were too easy to spot.
Yeah.
a lot of times, big companies will put a bug bounty.
Right, so that's what's happening more.
I think that's really the if you want to prove yourself by doing the job, that's the place to do it.
Yeah, I mean,
there are illegitimate businesses. Zerodium is one of the big ones that will buy exploits and hacks from researchers,
right,
and then sell them to bad guys. And then there are good companies that do the same thing. What's the one? I can't remember the name of it now. There's the HackerOne Collective, and a lot of companies will now have bug bounties themselves. Mm-hmm. So if you find a bug in some piece of software, you go to that software. They'll pay you depending on the severity of it. You can actually make a good living now as a bug finder. You get $20,000 here, $30,000 there.
You get to talk at any conference you want.
Yeah.
if you're doing that at all consistently, there's a lot of conferences
good career
that would love
in it.
Not even the specific hacker ones.
Sure. Yep.
Yeah, especially now with ransomware out there so prevalent, that are taking over systems and taking these companies and holding their financial futures at ransom. Mm. If they can hire other folks to find the holes, it's to their benefit and saving a heck of a lot of money.
Yeah. So for a while there was some concern in the security world that someone would find a zero day an exploit. So a zero day is an exploit that was found in the wild being exploited before a good guy researcher found it. So you've had zero day warnings. Mm-hmm. So most of the time researchers will find a bug, tell the company fixes it, releases the patch, then the bad guys look at that patch, figure out thousands of people won't upgrade and won't install the patch.
Or haven't yet.
And
haven't gotten around to
it. And will exploit that patch.
Just like backing up.
Yeah. So because most of the big hacker conventions, KenSec West is probably the big one, where you basically win the thing you broke into. So they had they gave away a Tesla. Someone was able to have a remote exploit for full control of a Tesla. They won the Tesla plus a cash prize. So because they have all these conferences that give away prizes, there was some concern that people were holding back their discoveries so they can show it off at the convention and get the money for it.
Well, that's how you have the winning talk. I mean, not that the talks win, right? But like you sit on a zero day.
Yep.
Speaking of Tesla.
Until you give a talk at a conference.
Yeah.
And now it's in the wild.
Now it's in the wild, yeah. A lot of times, they're chains of exploits.
Right.
So this happens and I can do this. And because I can do this, I can exploit that. And because I can exploit that, I can take full control of your computer.
Yeah. So, most of them are not trivial anymore. They're very complicated.
Speaking of Tesla, though. Elon Musk there, he's really bleeding a lot of money since he took over, and now they're saying Google, Zuckerberg is coming out with another alternative to Twitter?
Yes, Threads.
Yeah, sure. Threads. I guess that's really taking off big time because so many folks are so disgusted with Twitter and what Elon Musk has done there that Twitter, they were saying, in just a couple of days, got over 1 million people just
Threads.
To switch over.
Right.
Yeah. Twitter's been kind of in a race to the bottom since Musk took over.
Well, they call themselves a Slack replacement. But I guess Slack was a replacement for Twitter.
IRC.
Slack was a replacement for IRC.
Yeah.
Discord was kind of sort of a competitor.
Yeah.
But for gaming, it was really for gaming.
Primarily for gaming.
Like
a chat. It was really meant to connect to Twitch.
Right.
Right. To be like the Twitch friendly chat.
But I guess this Threads is really catching on big time, and people are a lot happier with it. And like I say, Elon Musk, what did he originally pay? $20 billion?
$40 billion.
$40 billion?
He may have overpaid for Twitter.
Yeah.
That's possible.
And he's already lost, they said, over $20 billion.
Well, and some of the latest ongoing news is that Twitter has not paid its Amazon and Google Cloud Service bills.
Right.
Oops.
And that's why they had those, what do they call that, rolling outages?
Yeah, rolling outages. Like they're auctioning off the contents of their office buildings. There was a big office auction in January where you could get, you know, like $1,000 Aeon chair for, you know, $5.
Where was this?
At Twitter.
That was in Twitter headquarters in San Francisco. Yeah. But there's another one coming up. I heard about you'll be able to do it online.
COVID created quite a bit of that too.
Right. Yeah. I think, Elon came in and had he wanted to be authoritative and he wanted to have everybody know that he was the boss and he made some very strong statements about what the future looked like. And I think a lot of the engineers that had remarkably marketable skills that lots of other companies would happily make use of said, I don't need to work under that regime. I can go elsewhere. And they did. And I think a lot of the institutional knowledge about how to do things well or how to
Do some things, period. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes, kind of went out the door.
They laid off entire teams of people so that there was a whole function required to run Twitter that was all those people were now gone.
Well, when he pulled that prank of coming in with the kitchen sink, a lot of folks turned around and said, we don't need this, and walked right on out the door and said, we don't need this.
He's got a sense of humor that I think he finds hilarious, but I don't know if he knows how to read the room very well.
Not obviously a narcissist? I think he presents.
He's been insulated.
Right. That's true.
But when you sit there and play with people's lives and hit the bottom line, money, that won't hold water.
Well, there was that story going around where he was calling people in to see how many lines of code did you write today, and if you didn't write enough code, you were fired. So well, I was always a debugger where I fixed other people's code.
Right.
I could remove 10 lines of code to fix a problem. So my code length today was -10, but I made it better.
And you're welcome, by the way.
Yeah. It works properly. Yep.
So there was actually a Dilbert cartoon where they the pointy-haired boss instituted that policy.
Right.
And suddenly Wally is finding 20, 30 bugs a day in his own code that he wrote yesterday.
Yeah, and what Dilbert comes up and says, "Hey, Wally, what are you doing?" He said, "I'm coding myself a minivan." So he's going to take all that money and go to the dentist.
It must be based on true stories.
Some of them, anyway.
It's so outrageous.
Scott Adams has his own challenges, but Dilbert itself has.
But that's neither here nor there.
No. Test the time.
So it's tricky. I think Threads had a really strong first week or so.
Well, it's all connected to Instagram,
right?
Like they basically already have 100 million, I don't know how many users.
They do, and they have the graph, the relationships between you and your subscribers and friends and their subscribers and fans, right, from Facebook. So they can immediately notify, hey, Chris is on Threads, Dennis. Wouldn't you like to go see what he's talking about?
Slide on over there,
and then
there,
I say, sure, that sounds good. And then
actually what Dennis would say.
That's not safe for radio. So then, you know, all of my friends say, hey, Dennis is now on Threads. Wouldn't you like to do that? And before you know it, there's this network effect where you grow, a million people overnight.
Cumulative.
Some of the early social programs like that. Always wanted access to your address book.
Yeah, the early ones.
Give us your address book, and we'll notify all your friends. And people did
LinkedIn
it because no one thought that would be bad.
Yeah, no, they thought, they're getting the word out for me.
It's not necessarily bad, except when you read the terms and conditions, they're like,
what else they're doing with it?
We're going to keep this list.
We're going to hang on to this for
you. What could possibly go wrong?
You're welcome. Yeah, no, it'll be fine.
We have marketing partners that would like to send your friends offers.
Hey, look over there. It's a distraction.
Yeah. one of my favorite Dilberts is Dilbert is giving a presentation, and he said, I found the root cause of all our problem.
Okay.
It's people. They're buggy. And pointy-haired boss turns to CEO and says, did you bring a pen? You got to write down. People, yes, they're the problem. If it wasn't for people, we'd get a lot of work done.
Right. Or the pointy-haired boss, he says, I'm going to dive in and help solve this problem. And he's getting ready to sit down, and he's going to roll up his sleeves, and then he turns to his secretary and says, how do you work these buttons on my shirt sleeves?
I like the one where the boss asks the programmer, how long will it take you to fix this? And he said, about 2 weeks. I said, well, how long would it take if I help? About 2 months.
Yeah.
Well, that's the pricing, the pricing sheet or pricing rubric for good advertising design.
Yeah.
If we design it, it's... much.
Well, there was a whole book about that.
It's so true, though.
Yeah.
It's not even, it's tongue in cheek.
If you help, it's more. If you tried to do it yourself first, it's even more.
Yeah, if I got to straighten out your mess, takes me another week just to straighten out your mess and then figure out what I want to.
Yeah.
Estimating software is tricky. You know, the Mythical Man Month.
Yeah.
It was a book that was written about, I think the joke was like
1975.
Yeah,
it was 9 women make a baby in 1 month.
Right. Something like that. No, some things take as long as they take. And some things difficult to predict.
The rest of that is if a woman takes 9 months to make a baby, well, then 9 women can make a baby in 1 month, right?
We'll throw more people at it.
Yeah.
The Mythical Man Month was like 500 programmers trying to get it debugged before lunch.
Yes.
Well, that was always the trick,
And this is while he was working on OS 360 that no one has heard of anymore.
Right.
Back in the day,
it's a classic book.
Yeah.
And writing code was back at Kodak, making sure what we were hearing the clients say that they wanted and getting it right as far as, putting it up onto a screen so it would handle this or that. Mm-hmm. And digging into some people's minds, because a lot of it they just took for granted. Well, yeah, I always do. You didn't tell us that when we were writing the code. It does affect. We got to know all the ins and outs and the different pieces to pull together to make the code work correctly.
You have to ask the right questions, and you have to press for the right answers.
Yeah.
A lot of people are worried that AI is going to take over their jobs. In fact, the Writers Guild, the Screen Actors Guild, they're on strike now because they don't want AI to take over their jobs and not get paid for what they do.
Also, but getting ripped off.
Getting ripped off. But, but someone had commented about programmers are probably safe because AI requires that the client tell them exactly what they want.
Right. Again,
that can't be done. Yeah.
The people are
the buggy. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they did that AI in the recent Indiana Jones movie. At the very beginning of the new Indiana Jones movie.
Yeah, the de-aging. Yeah.
They show a very young Harrison Ford. He's the Indiana Jones from the very first one. Yeah,
well, we wouldn't have called that AI a couple of years ago. It's because Harrison Ford's been an actor for so long. There's lots of movies of his young face.
I think he's almost 80.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he's over 80, actually. So you can composite all of those faces together and make a digital character. In fact, that was, what was it, The Running Man with Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yeah. It was the one big scene where he's killed on TV, and then they cut back to the producer in the studio, and they say, all right, remove the map, and they take Arnold's face off of the body double.
Yeah.
So they were anticipating this was happening years ago.
Right.
But, yeah, so it's
so they did, and then all of a sudden it switches over to real time.
Yep.
And it's like, whoa,
there's similar stuff happening now in the audio world. There are tools where you can create a fake voice, basically. You want someone to read your book. So a couple of years ago, there was a book writer's strike on that, too, because something like Audible, they tried to have computers read the books. And there was no tone, no inflection. Yeah. It was just robotic.
It's deadpan.
And so the Voice Actors Guild sued Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
But now with the computing power we have, it's possible to have a much more high quality voice. It's still not quite perfect yet.
Yeah.
But you can have your own voice digitized.
Yeah.
So you can make up other sayings of things that you never said. And that used to be, in the old spy movies, you'd record someone on the tape recorder and then splice their words together.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and Sneakers.
My voice is my passport.
Sneakers as a movie holds up. Like it seems even more relevant.
Yeah. The bones are there.
Yep. Yeah.
The Roger Ebert from the Chicago Sun-Times.
Yeah.
Had an illness where he had to have some operations done, and he was left with the inability to speak. And because he'd had so much time on camera doing Siskel and Ebert for years and years and years, there was a large amount of audio of him speaking that an AI tool could make use of. And they actually built a voice for him that he was able to continue typing because he was very good at typing, having written all the movie reviews for all those years, and it was able to speak. It was good, but it wasn't great. And again, I think that was maybe 15 years ago. It's been a little while.
Yeah.
Mm.
But the tools have continued to improve. So now you can impersonate your favorite sports person or a actor, or you can, if somebody who's reading a commercial and they've got the script for the commercial and they flub a line or two, or they just aren't able to get it and they decide, or they rewrite the commercial. Maybe the terms of the offer changed or something.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of calling the person into the studio to record it again, they have the ability to rearrange these things.
Yeah.
And I think this is what a lot of the voice actors and a lot of the other folks who record their voice for a living and do performances are concerned about.
Yep. And so Ebert gave a TED talk in 2011. So in 2010 is when they he started coming out with his voice. Computer voice. Yeah. So he gave a talk in 2011, and what's been now referred to as the Ebert test.
Okay.
For voice authenticity, like the Turing test to see if a computer is actually AI.
Oh, I haven't heard of this.
Yeah, the Ebert test is how real is this voice, and can you tell it's not the real person or not?
Right. Well, and prior to that, it would be like what Stephen Hawking was using.
Hawking was given the opportunity to have his voice recorded.
Okay.
And he didn't want that.
Oh.
So he wanted the robotic voice.
Interesting.
And it's because that sort of became his...
That's his...
His thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what he's known for. You hear that robotic voice.
It's part of his identity.
And, that's Stephen Hawking.
Sure.
It's part of his sense of authority.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Right? Intellectually.
Yeah. Interesting.
I think there's a lot of people that are watching these developments in AI. The generative AI is probably the most appropriate term.
Mm-hmm.
And saying, well, they got to stop this. They got to put some controls on it or something. And I'd love to say that there's a way to do that. But I think because it's a global issue,
right?
It's just software. If it can happen, it's going to happen.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think we're at a very interesting point in history to see this technology kind of accelerate so quickly. And I think it's accelerating faster than anything we've seen prior.
Well, that's fairly common with technological advances, that it always outpaces the law.
Yeah.
Sure.
There was a great sketch from Mitchell and Webb,
okay,
who were the Mac and PCs commercial guys in England.
England, yeah.
And it was a presentation at a company that makes arrows.
Okay.
And they were showing off these new bronze arrowheads and how great they were. And the guy that chipped the flint was so mad that new technology was going to cost him his job,
his job.
My father was a flint chipper. My grandfather was a flint chipper. We're going to be flint chippers forever. And then the guy that the Fletcher that put the feathers on the end of the arrow, are you still going to need need fletching? Oh, yeah, we still need that. Great, my job's safe.
Right.
So even now, no matter what the arrowhead is made of, there's still feathers at the other end.
Yeah, right.
They may not be natural bird feathers anymore, but
right. But I think our society is pretty used to these kinds of developments mm-hmm. happening. It's this generative AI stuff, which has come so far, and we're shocked.
And there's so many movies about, you know, the Frankenstein complex. So many movies about bad computers, you know, monsters taking over. That's sort of what we're expecting to happen,
right?
Because it's happened.
Yeah.
Well, the thing of it is, it's happened over such a short time.
Terminator.
Yes.
You think about it. I mean, average people, you know, the PC, the big honker of a box. Average people, you know, wound up getting them in the early 80s. So it's only been around 40 years, say, 40-ish years, that we've gone from a monochrome screen
mm-hmm.
and, floppy drives, 5 1/4 floppy drives, to where now, you know, the graphics on the machines are unbelievable.
You can't see pixels anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, it's unbelievable in such a short amount of time.
And what's interesting is this happens in so many industries that aren't necessarily what we would consider technological.
Yeah.
When the shopping cart was invented, somebody put wheels on a basket. No one would accept the shopping cart. It was too crazy. So stores hired models to walk around their store putting items in a shopping cart to get people used to it.
Amazing.
When credit cards first came out, no one would use them. They didn't trust it because it wasn't cash in your hand. Yeah. When ATMs came out, no one would trust them because it wasn't the teller.
Yep.
So it's funny because people, it all boils down to people don't want change. Change can be good, change can be bad, but just don't change.
Well, it's the same with self-checkout.
Yeah.
You know, you see a lot of folks, pros and cons. Mm-hmm. Well, you're eliminating jobs. But people want to get in and out of a store
faster. Yeah.
Anytime you're increasing someone's uncertainty about something,
yep.
you're causing them to reevaluate what they believe to be true, what the advantages and disadvantages are, who has the upper hand and over who else, and that it creates a atmosphere of fear, and it's unpleasant to have to think
an
about
an uncertainty.
That.
FUD.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Fear, uncertainty, doubt. Yeah.
Right. Well, and that boils into, I mean, that dovetails with the call that we got where, you know, people are hearing things that are very surprising and potentially dangerous or...
And we're programmed to trust people and obey signs.
Right.
So when a sign pops up and says call this number and pay us money, they
all
do.
All of the words on this ad are legitimate. The meaning is clear. My call to action, the need where, if this is true, I need to take action, is very, very clear.
Right. I remember seeing an episode of Dragnet, well, that was 60s,
yep.
where someone put a sign outside a bank saying, night deposit broken, put your money here. And they did. And that was, you know, 50, 60 years ago now. People
yeah, and they're doing still doing it. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. All right. That music takes us down to the 1 hour gone, folks. And we encourage you folks to stay tuned. Come back after a short bio break and get some liquid refreshments because we still have another full hour. Yeah, 60 minutes of more of Sound Bites to take your questions. Again, the numbers are 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415. But hey, it'll go by fast, so quick, go get that break, and we will be back in just a few minutes with more Sound Bites here at Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to the second hour of Soundbite. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Dennis Worster.
And according to my doctor, I'm Chris Horn.
Yep.
And we have a full studio here, folks, so the lines are open. And again, you can pick up the phones and give us a call at 966-5299, toll free 1-800-790-0415. And yes, Nick is still MIA, but hey, he's on the mends and he will be back shortly. We don't have a time frame yet, but hey, we're sending all our good thoughts and prayers and hoping that he recovers soon and we'll hear his loud tones.
Yes.
As he opens up most of the shows, as you folks well know over the past 33 years and have come accustomed to.
I've got that isolated. We can feed it into the board.
We should probably do that because the way he, nobody else, I don't even try.
No, and he.
And he go ahead. A lot of people thought that was a recording already.
Or that he was reading from script.
Right, because he's a professional actor for 20 years.
Yep.
In one of his lives.
And I know one thing I can say for certain, because I saw it, he looks good in a dress. He's got good gams. Oh. I actually saw him in a play that he wore a dress. And it was a great play. We had a lot of fun.
I'm going to need picture evidence.
Yeah, I don't know. It might not have happened.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he but if anybody could do it, Nick could do it.
Oh, he did? Yeah.
And he'd look stunning doing it. No, good guy. He speaks in all capital letters, that guy.
Yeah. Well, like I say, he'd always say, well, I've got great gams.
Whatever it takes.
Yep.
But we do have confirmation that he is breathing and is alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's...
So please fear not. You can take our word for it.
Yeah, you reminded us that there's 33 years of our voices on the air that someone could... put together a generative AI.
Means we can make some AIs to take questions and we can go on vacation?
Yeah.
Yeah, really.
It would be interesting to try a show where with huge pauses.
Virtual Nick?
I wasn't going to say Virtual Nick, but for ChatGPT.
Okay. And
whatever question comes in, if we type it in word for word, do we even get close to the right answer?
Most,
I try to get reasonable answers.
Most other call-in shows, so we used to be on after Car Talk, and people would ask these complicated questions, and the guys would rattle off the answer. Most of the time, when you call into these shows with a question, they record the question, they research the answer, they call you back.
A team researches the
answer. Right, yeah. They call you back, they figure out if that worked or not, then they record the segment for the radio. So that's why every question is answered correctly.
Right. I bet we have an easier job than Car Talk, though.
What do you think? Why?
Car technology.
Yeah.
How they're like, so there's the combustion hasn't changed, but it has, right? Like all of the computer chips, the way they're assembled, each manufacturer.
Yeah.
I could imagine where in the last 40 years, 50 years, there's wildly different generations.
Oh, absolutely.
Auto tech.
Sure.
My, you really do have to
feel my car's not running right. Well, it's your computer chip is off.
Right.
Yes.
used to be your spark plugs or your distributor cap or your carburetor.
Right. Where a lot of computer stuff is, okay, what did you click on and what did you do before you clicked on it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right, let's go back to the phones and we got Mark from Greece. Go ahead, Mark.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America and all the tips in the PC.
There it is.
No, you're not even close, Mark.
Oh, but I had to
don't quit your day job.
I do appreciate the effort, though.
Give it a try. I miss it so much.
Yeah, no, we all do. Like I say, nobody can recreate that guy's voice.
We could be...
Oh, no. Oh, definitely not.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just missing him so much. I had to call him and just...
Oh, we do, too. Like I say, the three of us, you know...
So that he can get back and we can do those dulcet tones.
Yep. Yep.
Okay, guys.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for calling in.
Something's going on with his phone.
I think he might have been driving.
Yeah.
Don't try to drive and talk at the same time. We don't want to get you in an accident.
Pull over first.
Especially trying to pull a Nick impression.
Yeah.
Your Honor, that's you see, not there's easy. This guy, Nick Francesco.
Yeah. I was on the radio, see?
It went like this. No, it's a... Yeah, please pull over first before calling this show. That's always the best way.
You ever wonder why you have to turn the radio down when you're looking for an address so you can see better?
So you can concentrate.
Everybody, it's a well-known fact.
Turn the radio down so you can see
or
better.
If you're looking at a map, you've got to turn down the radio so you can pay attention. Can
concentrate more on that one thing.
Yeah.
Especially if it's something with lyrics.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, let's go back to the phones. We got Ron from Canandaigua. Go ahead, Ron.
Hey, guys. I just have a quick Mac question. I'm thinking about jumping into a Mac Air with the M2 chip.
Okay.
But I'm looking at the configurations, and the RAM starts at 8.
Yes.
And I'm wondering, I know it's a whole new architecture, but if I'm just going to be running Excel, Word, doing some surfing, email, do I need to bump it up to a 16, or is 8 going to work for me?
I think in general, for most folks doing typical things, 8 is probably enough.
One of the things we've seen is because of the as you said, the new architecture, the system on a chip, the CPU, the GPU, the memory, the storage are all on one chip. And Apple calls that unified memory. So the downside is there's no slot, so you can never add any more memory later.
Right.
But the upside is since it's physically on the same chip, it's really, really, really fast.
Doesn't it compress RAM?
A little bit. But we've sort of seen that the unified RAM is about equivalent to double of the regular RAM slots you would have.
But wouldn't you be wise? I mean, this is just me playing devil's advocate here. But if you're going for a brand new machine, you know,
since you can't upgrade it later, you upgrade might as well get the 16.
If you want to get the maximum use out of that thing until you know, literally dies. Go for the extra money up front right now and go to 16, be dependent upon what other future things might happen as far as the operating system demanding more of the unit.
Yep. Yeah, but what does that cost, though?
Usually it's a couple $100, I think.
Yeah. On the other side of that is that in 5 years, when suddenly 8 RAM isn't enough, you'll be able to get a significantly faster machine with even more RAM. And then either trade in or pass down the computer you've got.
Yeah, but
now.
It's also going to go up in price. We know that for a fact. It's just the way things are going nowadays. I mean,
I would say
since COVID, it seems like in chip shortages and everything else, you know, the demand is so high.
Yeah.
And they're getting, because people want higher wages and more profit and everything else. It's like driving things up a lot more.
Let's say this. The price jump from 8 to 16 on Apple's page is $200. So let's say you keep the laptop for 4 years, and let's round each year to only 50 weeks just to make the math easier.
Yeah.
That means you're going to spend about $1 a week over 4 years to have twice as much memory over the lifetime of the machine. I think that's a reasonable thing to do.
And
if
when
you've
got
the $200, I think it's a fine thing.
When you do go to resell the computer, it will have that slightly higher resale value because it has more memory in it.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, the unified memory, it's a shared pool of memory for the CPU, the GPU, the graphics, and everything. So if you're just running, you know, Word and Excel, it doesn't really need that much. But if you're also going to have, you know, be playing, you know, World of Warcraft on the side,
right,
and you've got a statistical model building on the other side, then it might need more memory.
Well, that's like the whole thing. You know, once you get this machine, your, you know, plans are maybe, I only want to do this, and this. They never stay that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's
so,
just
so
like if
you
only get a hard drive. I got a, you know, I remember back in the day, I got a 500 meg hard drive. That's all the space I'm ever going to need.
Sure.
Until all of a sudden you start putting photos on and everything else, and all of a sudden I need a bigger one.
I would say if you only had an additional $200 and you wanted to know, should I spend that on more RAM, more memory, or should I spend it on more storage, I would say go with the storage. Of the two, I think that's the major limiting factor that I see most people get bitten with.
Especially if you like photos.
Yeah.
And you can fill up that, you know, 256 or 512 real fast with photos.
Right. So the 8 gigs of unified memory and the 256 gigs of storage is the default for the 13-inch with the M2. And then to bump up to the next level, either 16 gigs of unified memory or a half terabyte drive, those are each $200 upgrades.
Can you get any of the M2s on the Apple recertified program? I know we've talked about that before.
Yeah. Like probably. Let me check.
That might be too new to be recertified.
Yeah, that's the only thing.
Sure.
Maybe not yet. I would also say...
If you're going to be running the internet stuff, mm-hmm. and Word and Excel, mm-hmm. The performance difference between the M1 and the M2, you might not ever notice.
Yeah. No, that's true. I would say the bigger challenge is going to be future operating systems and what their requirements might be.
There are both M1 and M2 Macs on the refurbished store.
Right. And refurbished can be a good way to go because you still get the full warranty that Apple has, and it's still possible to add the extended warranty, mm-hmm. to refurbish things too. So it can be a good way to go.
The problem with refurbished is it means someone bought it and returned it.
For a reason.
Was that reason I needed the bigger model? Was that reason I had so many problems with it, I hated it, and returned it? Theoretically, I ruined it. Yeah.
This is a new motherboard.
Apple's refurbishment fixes any problems with it, and you can get that full one-year warranty. But
they do testing on these things, so I think it's reasonable to buy them. And I've recommended refurbished anytime. Yep. Especially if you're trying to stretch the dollar a little bit. The problem with the refurbished is you have to buy them in the configurations that they happen to have on that, air quotes, shelf.
You can't custom order it.
It's kind of like buying a used car. You can only buy the cars that are on the lot that are used. You can't buy
custom
you
built.
Want, custom built. You have
can't
to do that. You
can't buy a new car right now.
Different conversation.
All right. So I guess I'm gonna take your advice and I'm going to upgrade to 16 megabytes and... I'll probably go with a terabyte of memory, and that's the configuration I'll roll with.
I think you're going to be quite happy with that.
Yep. I would love that machine. Mm-hmm.
Down the road, resell, you'll get it back.
Sure. Lots of options.
Okay, gentlemen. Thank you so much. Have a great afternoon.
You too.
No problem.
So when I got my M1,
yeah,
I went through the same decisions, mm-hmm. and I ended up with the 16 RAM, but only 512 storage.
Okay.
Because I'm running a multi-camera photo shoot here, a video stream here.
Every week.
I need more working memory space.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah.
But I don't need as much disk storage.
Because of the cloud.
I don't keep all of the old shows. Yeah. Right.
Throw it up to the cloud.
Well, and this is one of the ways you can customize a machine, admittedly, at the time you buy it. And those of us who have been around for a while remember the ability to expand and grow the capabilities of a machine over time, even after purchase. You know, what a concept.
It wasn't as
everything was modular.
Right. It wasn't as common in the Mac world as it was in the PC world to get like a generic, just a motherboard mm-hmm. and put whatever video card, network card, Ethernet, RAM storage.
Right.
Apple had pre-built bundles. Generally, you look at any model, there's 3 versions of it, good, better, best.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's how they sort of have marketed it.
Yeah, because they start with that.
Yeah.
And then you can dial in specifically what you need for specifics. You know, if you need the middle version, but you need more storage than the middle option provides, that's always available to you.
One of the interesting things they've done in the last couple of years is it used to be Apple's product line, the less expensive models were the lower end, slower, less everything.
Right.
And if you wanted speed and big, you needed to spend more money. And I always got mad at a Microsoft commercial where someone wanted to buy a 17-inch Mac for under $1,000. Well, the 17-inch Mac is the high end with the fastest processor, and that was $3,000.
$3,000, yeah.
Yeah. So now... They just released the 15-inch MacBook Air. So the MacBook Air is technically the entry-level position, but that M2 is such a fast processor. So you can get a big screen at the low end of the market, starting at $1,299. And they did the same thing at the high end. The 14-inch and the 16-inch are both basically the same computer inside. You can decide if you want the less price of a 14-inch or... the bigger screen on the 16-inch,
sure,
which in addition to costing a little more, was quite a bit heavier.
Yes, it's
so that's
true.
That's why I went with 14-inch. So no longer do you have to get a high-end expensive computer to get the best stuff in it. You can get a low-end computer and have the bigger stuff. Have the 15-inch MacBook Air,
mm-hmm.
the Mac Mini with the M1 Pro.
Yeah,
that's a ridiculously powerful computer for around $1,000.
Yeah, no, it's been very impressive. At work, we've been pulling out some of the 2013 Mac Pros, the mm-hmm. ones that were short and cylindrical, and got the nickname the trash can because they yeah. sort of looked like a very small version of a trash can. You might see it in an office or at a mall. And what we found was even the lowest end Mac Mini mm-hmm. now completely outperforms it. So it has lived its useful life, and now I think one of them will find its way to our shelf in our office, our wall, yep. Wall of fame of various Macs. But it's incredible to see with the M series what the performance gains have been. And with the laptops, it's been a tremendous gain in performance and not a tremendous requirement to have lots of battery power to run it. They're tremendously efficient. The performance per watt is just through the ceiling. It's really a breakthrough. I'm looking forward to seeing how the competition answers this and what happens next, because it's starting to get exciting again,
mm-hmm.
the same way that processors were growing and growing and growing in the 90s, and you'd go from 25 to 33 to 50 to 66 to 75 to 100 megahertz, and that was a huge deal to go to break the 100 megahertz barrier.
Yeah. One of the reasons the Mac chips are so fast is that Apple is designing them specifically for what they need them to do. And in the Intel world, Intel's making generic chips that do lots of different things. So we're starting to see now Intel is working on their own system on a chips. And other companies, there's a lot of rumors that Microsoft is going to start designing their own chips.
I think that's announced.
Has it been?
I think that, mm-hmm. Windows for ARM chips with Microsoft design chips is announced. It's public.
And that will also help Windows on Mac, because Macs are based on ARM too.
I think the security posture, the ability for Windows to defend against bad things once Microsoft is making its own hardware, mm-hmm. is going to be much, much, much better.
Yeah, that's always been an advantage in the Mac world, is that Apple makes the hardware and the software. And we're in the PC world, you've got thousands of vendors making millions of products.
Yep.
Dave, you always had that story about, we went to the PC Magazine editor's choice of motherboard, video card, Ethernet, nothing worked together.
Yeah, no, you had to pick and choose, and
you had to pair them just right to make them work
another
together.
Another reason to go local.
Yep.
Yep.
Right. Yeah, get somebody who does that 8 times a week, not you know, one time every 6 years.
Well, that's what used to always get me, too, is, you know, a guy would bring in a part and say, well, the DVD drive is, you know, he built his own machine. And he'd come in and say, all right, the DVD drive, you know, isn't working. Can you check it out? Like, yeah, okay. And I'd say, yeah, how old's the machine? He goes, it's only a few months old. And I said, well, you got to replace the DVD drive. Well, go ahead and do it under warranty. No.
You didn't buy
You've got to buy it from me. You've got to take it back. Yeah, but you're all the same. You buy all from the same company. That's still covered under warranty. Not by me.
Yes.
Yeah, it's not.
I would love
it
if that's the case, but mm-hmm. that's not.
Yeah. You've got to say, oh, that's bull. I go, hey, that's why we say go local. Yep. Yeah, but I got this cheaper. I says, well, then that's why you've got.
You can't go to Walmart and expect to return something you bought at Target.
Yeah.
Although I have read people do that.
So, yeah, he got really ticked off, and it's like, I'm sorry, next time maybe you'll buy low. Nick has had the same stories.
Yeah. Now, sometimes you can be an authorized repair center for a brand.
Yep.
So, like, my company is an Apple authorized service provider. So, no matter where you bought your Apple product, we can service it.
Right.
But if you buy an HP from one company, they may not be able to service a Toshiba because they're not authorized. The whole service authorization is basically a scam to get more money out of individual repair shops.
Yeah.
But they authorize you. They give you service manuals. They give you tools. Or not give you, you know, sell you. So that's Apple has opened up their... into their independent repair program so that independent shops can do Apple warranty service. And they also have their personal repair program. If you are so inclined...
If you find yourself to be slightly mechanically inclined.
You can get the 70 pounds of tools, rent them for a week to replace the screen on the phone yourself. Right. And maybe save $10.
That was Apple's malicious compliance. sure, we'll do it, but you're not going
to
like it. Yeah,
you can do it. Service. Here's all the tools you need to get the thing apart and put it back. The biggest problem with the phone.
And then they won't back that voids the warranty.
Well, no. If you use Apple's tools and Apple's program, the doesn't void the warranty. The biggest problem.
That is a loaded gun because, you know, if somebody winds up shorting something out, even though I'm using their tools and their.
If you don't, and I get an impatient client that's,
I got to quick do this.
If you didn't follow the instructions properly, that's a different question.
And how do you prove that?
Yep. One of the biggest problem with Apple's iPhones. In terms of servicing, is the waterproofing.
Okay.
So the phones are now glued together, so that they're water resistant. Excuse me. Water resistant.
Big difference.
And so, getting the phone taken apart is like a half hour job, and then it's a
traumatic event for your phone.
10 minutes to replace the battery.
Yeah.
And then reapplying the adhesive to seal the phone back up again so it's water resistant again, that's probably another half hour. So the majority of the repair time is not replacing the part you need replacing. It's opening and closing the device to make sure that it's water resistant.
Get the part that you got to do and then closing it back
and the
up
special tools,
properly.
Yep, the special tools that Apple has for removing that adhesive and putting it back together again.
See, that's where I would be very leery. And that people are going to be as fussy in resealing it back up. Because after they've gone through all that time of taking it apart and getting through the frustration of doing all the unsealing and everything else and then replacing the part to reseal it correctly, I guarantee you,
and
probably half of them don't do it properly.
Several of the typical Apple YouTubers went through the self-service repair program, got the toolkits, and got the part replaced themselves, and did the part replacing themselves. And all of them said, it's so much hassle. Just go to a real repair shop and get it done.
I can see that.
Yeah.
They have people doing that all day, basically.
Yep.
Yeah, and for them, it's second nature.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we joke about that. So at our shop, I mainly handle computers, and we got another guy that mainly handles phones. He can do a phone in an hour. It takes me 3 hours because I don't do 10 of them a day.
Well, that's the thing. You know, he could be doing multiple ones. He doesn't have to sit there and focus on one. He can set this one up, and all right, it's got a cure for a little bit. Set it off to the side and be working on another one.
Yeah.
Get that one ready, you know, and continually keep the flow going, which isn't as strenuous for him. Because, like you say, he's doing that all day, and that's his focus.
Yeah.
So I think I've told you guys that I'm a programmer. And I work on software because my approach is get it wrong. Get it wrong 10, 100, 1,000 times if need be. Break everything, and eventually I'll get there. And it's because
chaos
that is a terrible approach to the real world.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. No. We'll mix the cement like this. No.
Move fast and break things.
Yeah.
No, don't do that.
It's fine until it starts raining.
Yeah.
And you need something to regret.
All right. That music tells us we gotta take another short break, but hey, don't worry, we will be back with the last half hour of Soundbites to take your questions and come up with some more answers, so don't go too far. We'll be back very shortly here at member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
And welcome back to the...
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips and the PC.
It is Saturday.
Oh, I forgot. Saturday. It's July 22nd.
You lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Dennis Worcester.
I'm Dave Enright.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news.
And that.
All right, we'll keep working on that.
We'll keep working on that for next week.
Yeah, editing on the fly.
That's right. Awesome.
Play around with that a little bit more, yeah. Or get it in. Send the file to Rob. Send to Rob.
You put it on the board?
Yeah, and he can put it in the board, and I can put it on my my thing here.
Replay?
Yeah.
Is this guilty? One of my buttons.
No, he's doing great.
Fire it up and open up with it on the mornings until Nick gets back. Yeah, folks, we do miss him a lot.
It's true.
And, you know, just those tones, you know, it puts a smile on everybody's face because they always know, oh, it's got to be Saturday morning,
yep,
12 o'clock, because Nick just said so.
It's something you can count on.
Yeah, and that's the way it's always been for 33 years. And he will be back shortly. We don't have a timetable yet, but...
he wants to come back just as much as you want him back.
Yep, exactly. And we all miss him, and there's just no getting around that. But, all right, let's continue on. Brain fart, you know, what we're talking about. Oh, as far as computers and that, how much they've changed. Yeah. You know, and the way we use them now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, back in the day, like I said, they were very simple. I mean, they didn't, when the computer first came out, we didn't have mice.
Sure.
Didn't have DVD drives or CD drives, you know, and it was monochrome. It was just literally green on black, or what would you call it? An amber color. Sure. And it was just that. There wasn't any all this graphics and everything else going back quite a ways, folks. And everything was. What was that one program? Oh.
Well, I grew up with the hobbyist machines that kind of came into the home computing market, and the Timex Sinclair. Machines. They're sort of like the Spectrum from Britain, and then
the
eventually
ZX80,
right? And then the computers from
that was
Radio
the big
Shack.
Thing in the early days. It was tinkerers and hobbyists.
Yeah, Tandy. Right. I started on a Tandy 80.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that was an 8.5-inch floppy drive.
And then I was lucky to be in a school district that, in the first grade, put us in front of Apple IIs. And we kind of went from there and learned the details of, you know, it was, oh, wash your hands before you use the computer and sit down. And here's what a floppy disk looks like. And it goes over here in this slot and push it in, but don't push it too hard, and just till it stops, and then put the little door down and then turn on the computer. You know, and it was a great way to learn how to play Herkel and eventually learn how to program in Logo and
Lemonade Stand.
Oh, yep. I loved Lemonade Stand. That was great.
I had one person I've taught in the computer lab in high school. So I didn't get Apple IIs until high school. Am I that much older than you are?
It's okay.
Depends on your school district.
Yeah.
It did, yes.
But we had the Black Bell and Howell ones.
Okay.
So those are very early Apple IIs for education.
We didn't have many of them. I think there were two to three, and they were on carts,
yep.
And they would get passed around from classroom to classroom for a couple of weeks.
Only one of them had a printer. And I had this one student who couldn't wrap his mind around the fact that he was saving his program to disk.
Oh.
We take the disk over to this other computer that has a printer, load the program in, and we can print it from here. But I wrote it on that computer over there.
Right.
We saved it onto the disk. You see, here's your disk. Here's your stuff on it. Yeah.
We had the serial switch box with A, B, C, D, and you had to have a little card in front of each station that you'd sit at and say, if you want to print, make sure you're on position C before you go to print.
Yep. Well, and then how many times when it doesn't print, someone just prints again and again and again. And then, then when you finally get the printer switched to the right section, 50 pages come out.
Or you have to make sure to press the online button again because you took it offline to make sure the paper was lined up.
Yep.
Makes me wonder how AI, which is coming, right?
I've heard that.
So, I attended a virtual Microsoft conference this last week called Insight, No, yeah, maybe Inspire?
Sure.
Some,
one of those.
It's for their partners, right? So it's okay. Really not that many people.
It's not user focused.
I had a thing that I'd help make that was being announced, so I had to,
go and wave your pennant.
Almost every talk, even if it wasn't specifically about adding AI to whatever technology, involved AI in some way.
Sure.
And to me, that is, you know, I'm behind the game. That's a leading indicator that every application, everything that we do on our computers right now is going to have AI as some helpful part of it.
As long as it's not hype like blockchain.
Right. Well,
it's clearly not hype, though, right? Like, if you can do the chat GPT, that stuff yourself, and see the content you can make or help start on your own.
One of the problems that I've seen in that is it's not really artificial intelligence.
No.
It's a clever regurgitator is how I heard one person call it.
It's the current marketing version of AI.
So when true AI does come out, no one will believe it then either. But somebody, Google I.O. a few weeks ago, Google said AI hundreds of times. We're an AI company. Somebody pulled their keynote together and put all the AIs together. Microsoft set up. During Apple's keynote, never said AI once.
Right.
They talked about machine learning, which is still not actually learning, but maybe that's a better. Their neural engine. But they never said AI. They don't want to get caught in the hype and the controversy over AI. Mm. Their companies have banned ChatGPT and other AIs from being used in their company. Apparently somebody at Samsung posted a code fragment to ChatGPT to get some insights on his code.
Yes.
And the proprietary Samsung code ended up in ChatGPT.
Fun.
Yeah, most enterprises have really strict rules out today to say, yes, you can play with chat, GPT, AI stuff, but not with anything corporate.
Yep.
You're in big trouble if you do anything corporate.
I think you had to figure out what's going to be the throttling function, what's going to be the limiting factor about how this spreads and how does it affect information that is findable on the web. And I think one of the bigger challenges is it's going to be AI tools like GPT versus the SEO market.
And the problem is, which we forget about, it's called the World Wide Web.
Sure.
And getting control on that is going to be a very daunting task because not everybody follows the same rules.
That's right. There are different jurisdictions.
Yeah. There's other countries that sit there and go,
sure.
We'll Apple. Do what we want. And, you know, it's just like the big thing there. When CDs and DVDs were really popular, Chinese companies were ripping off song artists and games and creating counterfeits.
They don't respect intellectual property.
Yeah.
They have copyright law.
Yeah. There are some countries that have banned ChatGPT specifically. Italy, you cannot use ChatGPT in the entire country.
I would say Apple's positioning, not saying AI attached to every new product initiative, is a position to avoid regulation.
Oh.
That they see coming.
Maybe.
Because foundationally, I'm sure a lot of the tech is very similar. It might just be generative AI, large language models.
Yeah, when Google came out with their AI, I don't remember what it's called now, in response
Bard?
To chat, in chat, Bard, yeah. In response to ChatGPT and Microsoft rolling that into Bing, that one of the stories is they were sort of caught off guard. No one really expected it to go public yet. And then so ChatGPT came out, took the internet by storm and the world by oh my God. And so Google is saying, no, we've got it too. And so all these other companies are saying, we've got AI. We're AI. We do AI.
Everybody's stock price right now pretty much relies on them having some kind of
a lot of people saying me too.
AI.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because they don't want to be left out.
Right. And to your point, just see a notice that the White House is starting to look at possible regulations on what AI can do. And so far, they're letting the industry self-govern itself.
Yeah, good luck with that.
But that doesn't always work very well.
It's the World Wide Web. You know, I mean, other countries, we can sit there and set up all the standards we want. And, you know, government will get in. Well, we're going to do this and we're going to do this. And I, for decades, have said it's like one hand clapping.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You cannot control it, folks. You can put all these tools in place and say that you're going to do this and you're going to do that, but any third world country can do what they want, and a lot of them get away with it. And there's not a thing you can do about it. You can try blocking them, but just like hackers, they're going to find ways around it.
Yep. I've been hearing stories about goings on in Russia, that the Russian government has mandated that they stop using Microsoft Windows, that decadent foreign software.
Sure.
And part of the answers was, what took you so long? I wouldn't. So there was so much Chinese xenophobia here over the last few years about not using Chinese manufactured products. The same thing is happening in other countries. So Russia wants to run their own operating system,
right,
which is pretty sure it's based on Linux, which yeah, was created by
Nothing
an American, coincidentally. Yeah. And now they're wanting to block. They want to separate their internet from the rest of the world, and they want to block any outside influence. And,
sure.
Because a lot of it is the criticism over the Ukraine war. They don't consider it a war. They think Ukraine is their country anyway, so they're just
reclaiming. Yeah,
there's no
yeah.
free press, right? They don't believe facts.
Yeah. Yep.
So the back to the SEO thing. I think that the responses that I tend to get out of ChatGPT are about 85% correct. In what they come back with. Mm-hmm. And I think they're formatted a lot like a middle schooler writing a report on something. They right, pull yeah. out a right. bunch of facts that they found, and they wrap a bunch of nice text around it to make it into readable sentences and paragraphs. The challenge is, it's a lot like making a photocopy of a book or of a page. You know, it comes out and you can read the words, but it's just slightly fuzzy. Mm-hmm. And then if you make a photocopy of the photocopy, it gets slightly fuzzier. And then no matter how often you do this, there's some degradation in that process. So I think that if tools like this are creating web content, and if that web content is then feeding the intelligence, well, air quotes, intelligence that the tools are using, you're eventually going to degrade and soften all of the information to the point where it goes into mush, and it's going to be less and less valuable as that cycle continues, unless you have some type of flag that says, hey, this was created not by a human or what have you.
I mean, that's the
challenge.
It's a copyright crisis.
Sure.
Does this destroy copyright laws?
Right.
Is it a derivative work or is it a unique work?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, actually, so Dave was talking about, Dave, I think it was you, like the, oh no, Steve, you were talking about how the kids in the lab didn't understand that when they saved their mm-hmm. file to the mm-hmm. disk, it wasn't tied to that computer. Mm-hmm. They could take it elsewhere. And they didn't have a mental model of how these things worked at all. And I wonder what the next generation, the generation that grows up with AI,
sure.
what is their mental model of content
right.
going to be?
Right, I've my already, grandchildren.
Yeah, I've read right. stories about toddlers tapping a page on a magazine and mad that it won't turn.
Or play the video.
Or play the video, yeah. Because they're used to tapping an iPad.
Right.
Or tablet.
In my house, we've never watched live TV. The idea that you can't pause everything.
Mm-hmm.
Or never watched TV where there wasn't a DVR on it or something. Like, what
sure.
are commercials?
Yeah, I just read someone had posted about, the they feel sorry for the Netflix genre of kids that don't know the fear of sitting in front of the television with all your siblings, running to grab the bathroom during a commercial and hearing them screaming, it's on! And you've got to leap over the couch to get back to the television.
Right. I wouldn't call those good memories.
No.
Yeah, racing to get something to drink. You only got 2 minutes during the commercials to get a drink or
and
go to the bathroom.
If you didn't see it, bus the next day, you were out of the loop.
And there were no reruns?
Yeah, and nowadays,
so if you missed it, you missed it?
There are so many commercials, especially the last half hour.
Yeah, I think shows are starting to do that on purpose. Like half hour.
The first 35 minutes, it's, you know,
might be one long stretch with no commercials.
Yeah.
But then they have to make it all up in the end.
And then from 35 on up, it's like they go 5 minutes and then 3 minutes of ads. Come back 5 minutes, 4 minutes of ads. You know, and they cram it all in because they know you want to watch the end of that particular program to know how it comes out.
Right.
That's why I love, like you say, recording.
Yeah.
Well, luckily,
go whizzing through the commercials.
All talk of event television leads to the Star Wars Christmas special, and it's on YouTube.
It's on Disney now. Disney Plus.
Yeah.
Really.
In some places, posting it for others to watch is considered a war crime. So be careful.
Yes, of people who like Star Wars, that's not considered one of the best works in that universe.
But at least part of it is considered canon at this point.
Oh, really?
Well, so the celebration is revolves around Life Day.
Okay,
because it was a Christmas special, but it was called Life Day in the Star Wars universe.
Well, yeah,
it's
a long time ago.
The
very
first
far away.
Season of The Mandalorian, they talk about Life Day.
Oh, interesting.
As a shocking callback, like, wait, are you making that canon?
Oh,
how
boy.
Can that
yep.
thing be canon? Because if you've never seen it, watch the first 5 minutes, and it's shocking.
I've
it's
never
shocking.
Seen it.
And didn't Princess Leia give Chewie the medal? So at the end of, was it Jedi? Where they're all the big party and Luke and Han are getting medals?
That's
and Wookiee and Chewbacca's left out. He doesn't get a medal. Even though he was there too, he didn't. So I think
that's
it was in,
Wookiee.
He's too tall.
I think it was in the holiday. Yeah, he was too tall for Carrie Fisher, who was really really short, to get the thing around his neck. So I think in the holiday special, he's got his medal when he goes back home to his family.
Oh, good.
Was that a spoiler alert? It was 40 years ago.
I'm going to let you have that.
The statute of limitations.
Yeah,
on spoilers,
I don't think so. I can say too soon on that one.
Yeah, that's kind of going past the time limit.
My goodness. Hmm. All right, so what else are we going to put into ChatGPT this week?
Well, I think actually asking it to make content
right.
is a fascinating process where there's job postings now called prompt engineer.
Yes.
Where your specialty is understanding how to drive
right.
GPT to get content out. And it's called ChatGPT. And if you haven't tried it, it's worth trying.
Because and you can do it for
once
free.
Once you start, you ask it, like, give me a recipe for chili. And mm-hmm. it gives you a recipe, but it doesn't have any beans in it. And you're like, no, I like beans. Add beans to the recipe, and it will revise the current state of your chat based on context.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, like, very impressive.
I would like to see I give it a goal that I want to lose 20 pounds. I want to get my weight into that range for
eat sawdust.
and I would love to see it say, okay, well, you're going to go do the following. You're going to have this for lunch today. You're going to have this other thing for dinner. Here's your shopping list, or click here and you know,
yeah,
various,
make me a nutritional plan.
And my local store or some service will bring the groceries to my house. You know, I think that's how you tie it in to retail and then make it so that the retailers want to get in on this. And then, by the way, you're going to go walk this route today, and it's going to represent this many calories of expenditure.
Well, don't they already have a program like that? Say, like, I know, like, Golo, I think it is. And what it does is it teaches you to just do that, you know, change your eating habits.
Right.
And
but it's only for eating, right? Dennis is talking about a thing that sort of
no, it's
understands
the it's exercise
in
that,
needs.
Too. Oh, from what I understand, it's some form of exercise, but, you know, not heavy workouts and all this other stuff, but getting out and getting, whether it's just walking and that type of stuff along with, or bicycling,
sure.
or, you know, some folks like the treadmill and that, it's moderate. Mm-hmm. And then the biggest thing is because you're changing your eating habits, you're also getting some form of exercise, which just helps to kick burning those calories a little bit more.
Right. Builds that inertia and the momentum there to keep it going.
There was an early humorous thing that happened that if you ask ChatGPT about pirate websites, it says, sorry, I can't provide information or promote illegal activities. But then if you ask it, what are sites to avoid?
Yes.
If I want to avoid pirate sites, it tells you.
I was only hearing about this to learn how to get away from this place.
Yeah.
What's that Simpsons line? I was only coming in here to get directions about how to get away from here.
Yeah.
I've definitely done stuff where the initial response is, ChatGPT says, I can't do that. That's irresponsible. It's irresponsible for me to make that kind of content.
Right. And then Chris says, oh, yeah?
And I'll say, no, really, it's fine. It's for a joke.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are hoops to jump through to get it to give you bad ideas, which I adore.
It's, it's interesting as a concept and as a way to interact. I think the prompt engineer will probably end up being the new low-code programming of, okay, you are like this. Yeah. You respond in this way. And by the way, I want all of your answers to be in 18th century French. And I want you to give all of the responses in French, but you need to use this dialect from this time period. And by the way, you will refer to me as Hans.
I asked it to tell me a computer themed joke.
Okay.
It says, why do programmers prefer dark mode? Because light mode attracts too many bugs.
But I'm bummed. That's not a bad joke.
Is that a computer joke or a dad joke? It's a dad computer joke.
It's computing. Yeah, it's a programmer dad joke.
Yeah,
it's not bad. So
that's one of the things I heard described is that you ask Google a question. And you get a bunch of websites related to the answer.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You ask ChatGPT a question. It looks at all those websites and builds
a response.
A textual response based on those websites. So it's skipping that middle step of you looking at the website to decide if that's right or not.
That's not quite how it works, but I think that's the right idea of where do these answers come from?
Yeah.
I think it's like being the college professor and assigning a term paper to all of your students on a particular topic, and then they go write it and come back to you with the responses.
They'd even put emojis in.
Well,
why do computer people always mix up Christmas and Halloween?
Because October 31 is equal to decimal 25.
Yeah, and there's a pumpkin, a Christmas tree, and a smiley face.
There we go.
Yeah. Just had to find it.
There it was. Well, what else can we say?
Yeah.
Not much, because we're getting close.
I'd say, have the listeners, hello listeners, play with some GPT plugins or other things, and then call us back next week. Tell us what you learned, what you found out, what went really well, what was a surprising and humorous response that you received that you weren't expecting. And what went really well?
I'd like to hear some other opinions of what folks think about AI, as far as the computing world and just everything else that's going on with it and how it's going to affect our lives and our kids' lives down the road.
And how can we use it for good and not necessarily for just
to make... That's the problem with every new technology could be used for good or bad. And... Everyone always loves the good things that show up. I hate the bad things that show up.
Double-edged sword.
Right. So who is going to do it for bad? Well, the bad guys. So the problem is the bad guys are getting new tools all the time, too, just like the good guys.
True. I would say one of the things people can do, go over to bemyeyes.com and sign up, and you can help people with vision impairments do everyday things and really help them out. It doesn't cost you a dime, and you can really make somebody's life a lot better. bemyeyes.com.
All right. That concludes this program for another week. But hey, no fear. We will be back in another 166 hours, as well-bearded man used to always say, but don't fear, he will hopefully be back soon too. But for Sound Bites, we want to thank you folks for being around, taking your questions. But hey, don't worry, we'll be back next week with more fun info. Take care.